Well, good morning and welcome to Mountain Money, KPCW's program about business, personal finance, real estate, investing, anything to do with making money, holding on to it, and making it grow. This is Pam Wiley with my co-host, Larry Warren.
And good morning to you. Crisp morning. I had frost on the windshield to scrape off this morning. Our first guest today wrote the bestseller job hunting book, What Color Is Your Parachute? And you've seen this book now for 40 years. It's been a New York Times bestseller for many of those years, and it tells us all about how to find a job you like in a job market that stinks.
Now, we've got Dick Bowles on the line. Dick?
Yeah.
So What Color Is Your Parachute is, as Larry said, is in its 40th year. There are 10 million copies in print. It's been revised every year except one out of the last 40, and that's one way to keep up with the times, and is available now in 13 languages. If you speak Dutch, German, Turkish, Polish, simplified Chinese, complex Chinese, Portuguese, Russian, Indonesian, Italian, Latvian, Japanese, and or Bulgarian.
Latvian. You even publish in Latvia. So your advice must be fairly universal, is it?
Well, let me add one thing to what you just said, and that is Time Magazine 2 weeks ago designated the book as one of the 100 best nonfiction books to appear in the last 88 years.
Wow.
That's a good one.
That's high praise.
And none more astonished than I.
Going back to how many places it has been translated, is finding a job, looking for a job, finding what you want to do in life pretty universal across the countries?
Across the world or
yes,
just the country?
Across the world.
Yeah, because it's essentially like dating. It's much more like dating than it is like buying a used car or something of that nature. It's two people looking at each other and trying to determine if they want to go steady. And so the same dynamics that govern human nature govern job hunting. And, of course, human nature is the same the world around.
Well, you're so right there. So you have these two people sizing each other up and saying, okay, do we want to even go for the first dance, right?
Yeah.
You've already hopefully done a lot of work on this thing before you even get face-to-face, right?
Hopefully, yes. But they did a survey a year or so ago of college graduates who couldn't find a job immediately and went back to live with their parents. And they tried to find out what was the average amount of time they were spending on their job hunt. And it turned out to be 1 hour a week.
Finding a job has to be your
full-time
job.
I couldn't find a dog in 1 hour a week.
Exactly. And if you're unemployed, that really has to be your job. You have to be at it 40 hours a week or more, don't you?
40 hours is sufficient, yeah. You need some time to recoup and to recover your breath. But you will find very few job hunters who are willing to keep at it that long. Let me just say quickly why. The job market is marked by two trends. One is the job hunter wants to do whatever strategies will blanket the most territory. So they like resumes a lot because you can send those out to dozens or if not hundreds of people. Employers, on the other hand, like to hire with low risk. They don't like if you look up cost of a bad hire, HIRE, on the internet, you'll find it ranges as high as $165,000 if they hire badly. And so the employer wants low risk. Well, during good times, the employer is willing to accommodate the preferred method of the job hunter. They will read resumes. They will post their vacancies. But when times turn tough like now, the employers typically default to their preferred position. They like to hire from within. They like to hire from some colleague that recommends somebody and can assure them this person is pretty good. So the job hunter goes about the job hunt in good times, sending out resumes, and they're very happy, and employers cooperate. But during bad times, job hunters don't change their behavior, but employers do, and so job hunters falsely conclude, well, there must be no jobs out there, when in fact what has happened is employers have defaulted to their preferred as low-risk as possible hiring practices.
You mean that the employers might be intimidated by 100,000 resumes?
I actually saw a room with 133,000 resumes in it waiting to be looked at.
Oh, my
wow.
gosh.
That was at an airline, which shall remain nameless.
So, okay, so if somebody's out of a job, what's the first thing they have to do about attitude?
The first thing about attitude is they need to adopt at least two ways of going about everything. They need to have at least two ways of going about the job hunt. They have to have at least two different targets. They have to have at least two different kinds of places they would like to work at, say a large place or a small place. If they have alternatives, they can hold on to their hope. If they don't have alternatives, if they put all their eggs in one basket, let's say they just send out resumes, the statistics are that by the second month, out of 100 people that do that, just one method of job hunting, 51 will give up. If they have two methods, only 33 out of 100 will give up.
Now,
of course, those that give up have to come back to the job hunt eventually, but the point is they quickly lose heart, and they stop looking, at least for the time being, when they only have one method. So the first thing, if I were job hunting tomorrow myself, I would do it, be sure I have alternative ways of going about every part of the job hunt.
And one thing you're recommending is look for small companies. Don't look for the big GEs of the world for a job. Find the smaller companies where jobs are created faster, or which create most of the jobs in America.
That's correct. But that's been true for years and years and years. Actually, it's been modified over the years. It used to be just go after small companies with 20 or less employees, then 50 or less, then 75 or less, whatever. But now they've modified that because they've discovered that actually it's new small companies that have the most jobs, not just a small company. If a small company's been small for 10 years, it's not as likely to be producing new jobs as one that's just been created a year or two ago.
Okay, so when you're going to approach that small company, what are you going to do?
Well, the first thing you want to find is, apropos what I was just saying about employers' preferred method, they like as low risk as possible, which means if you can find somebody they know that will recommend you and certify that you are a good worker or that you have the talent or the stick-to-itiveness or whatever, that greatly increases your chances. And unfortunately, since the Internet has become wildly popular, which was, I dated it back to about 1996 when this first began to be used widely by job hunters, the Internet has sources which can help you find such people. The best known one and the best one is the site called LinkedIn. And there, I tell people who are job hunting, go looking for what I call bridge people. They used to be called contacts, but nobody knew what contacts meant. Bridge people are people that know you and know them. So that means you have to have a target. You have to decide what kind of a company you want to work for, and then you have to have the name of a specific company. But you can use LinkedIn to find somebody you know that also knows somebody at the company you're targeting, and then they can recommend you to the employer, and thus the employer is reassured that this is a relatively low-risk hiring decision on their part rather than if you just come at them out of the blue.
So even if you know somebody who knows somebody who knows somebody at that company, you might want to pursue that if you know them at the level where they really know you professionally, they know exactly what you're about, and the rest of the links fall into place as well. Because it's who you know who can vouch for you.
Yeah, and what's different today, and this is why my new edition, I revise the book every year. We didn't mention that necessarily. But why the new edition is so different from previous editions is the government used to facilitate a lot of this stuff. The government hired people. The government gave you financial aid. The government gave you retraining. The government gave you a social place like one-stop career centers and gave you statistics about what industries were hiring and what were not. But with all this talk in Washington now about austerity and about reducing the federal budgets and so forth, inevitably the things that the government used to be doing to help job hunters are going to attenuate and be less available and so on as the time goes by. And so now job hunters have to be more in charge of their own job hunt. They have to take responsibility and say, nobody's going to come and rescue me. I've got to know how to go about job hunting And so in this year's edition, the 2012, I talk at great length about how job hunting has now become a survival skill. And you've got to master it yourself. You can't depend on somebody else to teach you how to do it.
And you can't blame anybody else. So it's that Swedish proverb, the best place to find a helping hand is at the end of your own arm.
Is that a Swedish proverb?
Well, I'm sure it's...
Or did you just make that up?
Too.
I never knew that.
In any event, there are a lot of people in the job market now who've probably never been in the job market who thought they had a job for life with their company, and it must be a shock for them to find in their 40s or 50s or God forbid even their 60s to find themselves unemployed and desperately in need of a job.
Yeah, and what that produces, I even put a new chapter in the book this year about job hunting depression, because what that produces is a great deal of despair. If they haven't job hunted for years and years, obviously they job hunted sometime in their life, otherwise they wouldn't be employed now. But when they lose their job now, they haven't been job hunting for just years. So they go about it however they remember they did it 10 years, 20 years, 30 years ago, and that's when they've run up against kind of counter moves that an employer makes versus job hunters' moves that I was talking about earlier. Despair, I talk a great deal to groups of job hunters, and what I've noticed of late is that I'm talking to groups that are much smaller in size. Say I go to the same place I used to go to, the groups are much smaller in size. Now, I know there are more people out of work now, so I expect when I go there, I'll see a lot more people than I did in the past. Instead, it's the opposite, and that's because they have given up hope. They have just said to themselves, this is such a bad job market. No matter what I do, I'm not going to change things, so why should I show up for this job club or this job support group? And that despair just wipes them out. It takes out the heart out of them. They begin to lose faith that their life has really counted for something. So it's a really bad situation.
So they've not looked for a job, say, for 10 or 15 or 20 years. And like you say, the whole method of finding employees has changed. So what do people need to learn about the new job market? They can't just look in the want ads for help
yeah.
wanted ads and mail out blind resumes. They have to go to different websites and like you say, milk the LinkedIn connections.
They have to choose the place where they would like to work, whether or not they know for a fact that that place has a vacancy. They can't wait for a vacancy to appear because, as I mentioned, during tough times, employers don't have as hard a time finding employees as they do during good, so therefore they don't advertise vacancies as much as they do when times are good. So a job hunter has to understand it makes more sense to choose a place where you'd like to work, and as we were saying a little earlier, a smaller place, a place with 20 or 50 employees at best, and target that place and go after it. I know a guy that walked in on a place at 11 o'clock and a vacancy in his field and specialty had just been created at 9:30 that morning because the employee there had walked off the job and said, I don't want to work here anymore. So that vacancy existed for an hour and a half. When he walked in, not knowing whether they had a vacancy or not, and he got hired. And I know so many stories like this. It's important you pick where you'd like to work and pick the place that, according to the size of the organization, is more likely to have a vacancy and approach that place.
Well, I can say as a consultant, I've been a consultant for decades and decades, and that basically means that you're always job hunting because
sure.
you go out for one consulting project and then you have another one. And the first thing that you always have to remember is, as you said, is the attitude of, just because you don't have a job, it doesn't reflect on you. It doesn't mean that you're worthless. And
that's
you
right.
really have
that's
to
hard for people to hold on to that.
Exactly. And you have to understand that you are not your job, and your skills are still intact and all your ability to provide something that an employer wants and needs desperately are all there.
Very true. And that's why I tell people in chapter 13 in the new edition, I tell them, you need to sit down and do an inventory of who you are and what it is that you have in the way of your favorite transferable skills and your favorite knowledges that you have up there in your head, because then you can approach a different kind of place. You don't just have to go after one kind of job by thinking of yourself as a series of building blocks stacked on top of each other. You can rearrange the order of those building blocks, and you have a different way, a different kind of work that you can approach employers for. But you have to start out by doing an inventory of yourself. You can't just assume, oh, I've lived with myself all these years. I know myself very well. People, when they do a self-inventory, tell me again and again, that was what made the difference in their job hunt.
Now, Dick, a lot of people today frustrated with finding a job are enrolling in colleges, trade schools, anything to improve their skills. And I kind of get the feeling that every year we're graduating now more highly trained people who still aren't going to find a job. What should people be going back? What kind of skills are in demand that people could help themselves by going back for more training in?
Well, strangely enough, if they're coming straight out of college, we know the answer to that. We don't know the answer so well when it comes to people who want to go back after many years of being out. When they're coming out of college, it's mathematics, applied mathematics. Google lives by applied mathematics, and so do many other companies. So that's become a new emphasis in terms of training and retraining. But actually, I was called over to Spain, and I've been consulting with some of the large organizations here in America. They're all tired of retraining. They're all tired because people get retrained for something. Everyone tells them, oh, there's a great demand for this. But by the time they finish the retraining, the vacancy rate is like a pendulum. There's a lot of need for the people. They start the training. By the time they finish their training, the pendulum is swung to the other side, and now there's more bodies competing for that kind of training because everyone's told them, oh, that's the new skill you've got to have, and now there are no vacancies. So that's why I tell people you've got to sit down. Instead of training for a specific skill, you've got to figure out what you already are very, very good at. Are you very good at analyzing? Are you very good at researching? Are you very good at systematizing information or organizing information? If they sit down and figure out what they already possess, that is the very best kind of preparation rather than going and saying, I need computer skills or I need this kind of skill because that's what society is buying. Society changes so quickly in its needs that the old kind of training that we always used to hear about is proving more and more to be ineffective.
And aren't you going to be stronger and more confident when you know what you have to offer?
Well, yeah. I mean, I've been conducting workshops for over 40 years now, 2 weeks long, 5 days long, 4 days long, 1 day long. And I find again and again that people, when they do the inventory that's that I've taught people for all these years, when they do this inventory, their self-confidence is just astonishing in the way it changes.
Well, they're looking
at even within 5 days.
They're looking at what they have instead of what they don't have.
That's right. And they find out that their uniqueness does not lie in the possession of any one skill. It lies in the way they put all their skills together. It's like beading a string of pearls. You put the pearls on the string according to size and brilliance and lucence. Whatever the word is.
Luminescence? I don't know.
You decide how you put those pearls on the string, but when you're done, it's the whole pearl necklace that astonishes you, not just any one pearl. And it's the same with people's talents and skills. What they have is not unique. What's unique is that they put it together in a certain way, and that's what the inventory that I'm telling people is the most successful kind of job hunting is so important. That kind of an inventory says not just what do I have, but how do I put all these things together? How do my skills work with each other? And once you know what those skills are, you begin to see the answer to that.
And so you walk into your interview and you're feeling complete in yourself, and the employer certainly wants to see somebody who has that sense of themselves.
Yeah,
who knows what they can do.
Don't just inventory what you can do. Inventory what you can do that you love, because the love of doing that work will show when you're being interviewed, and also, of course, once you're on the job.
That's great advice. That's wonderful advice.
What can you think of? You know, the other thing is to create your own job, I suppose, to be an entrepreneur,
yes,
figure
absolutely.
Out what you're good at, and try to make it a business.
There's an internet site called Odesk. It's small O, and then the word desk, capital D-E-S-K. And there's a part of that site which is called Find a Job, and you can find contract work. You can find work that just is for a certain period of time, just to achieve a certain project and complete that project and so on. So when we talk about people creating their own job, they don't have to start a whole company. They often can think of themselves as a contractor and rent themselves out, as it were, for piecemeal kinds of work that adds up to a real full job when you put all those pieces together over the year.
You know, another thing that actually some relatives and friends of mine have done is take temp jobs with temp agencies that wind up becoming full-time job offers.
Absolutely, and that speaks to the way that I was talking about earlier about employers' preferred way of hiring, because they can see you in a temp job, they can watch you and see how you perform, see you show up on time, and all of that. They get reassured that now they can. It's a kind of a low-risk hiring situation for them, because you've demonstrated before their very eyes what kind of a worker you are and how well you do that work. So the volunteer route has always been, or the temp route, has always been very, very productive for job hunters. What's different today is that temp workers used to be just secretaries. If you said, I went to a temp agency, everybody would assume you were an office worker. Now there are temp agencies for physicians. There are temp agencies for contractors. There are temp agencies for almost every kind of thing you can think of. If you're near a large enough urban center, you just look up temporary agencies in the yellow pages, and you often can find lists for specialties that you would never have dreamed there would be a temp agency for, say, 10 or 20 years ago.
All right. Well, Dick, thank you so much for being with us this morning.
And, well, I'm happy to.
Yeah, and the book is What Color Is Your Parachute? It is a practical manual for job hunters and career changers. 2012.
40th anniversary edition. Congratulations. You made a job out of writing What Color Is Your Parachute?
Well,
and then consulting.
I was trying to help some friends, and I did some research to help them. And then I self-published the book originally, and then I started revising it every year, and everybody wanted a copy of it. For the people that I'd never dreamed would want, the Pentagon wanted copies, the State Department wanted copies, General Electric wanted copies. So I flip-flopped into this field. I certainly didn't choose it.
Well, congratulations on
that. And I bet they bought more than one copy apiece, too.
And it's going to be online in November as well?
Yeah, Capella University in Minneapolis now is producing an online course based on my book, because I've been conducting live workshops since 1974. I was going to say all my life, but not quite. Uh-huh. I'm 84 years old now,
and
I've been doing this for so many years, and I just decided I can't. I need to be writing. I have six new books in me. I need to be writing those books. And I don't have the time to do live workshops anymore. So Capella came along about a year or so ago.
Great.
And said, hey, we'd like to create a course that has some of your magic, as they put it. And
good
so they've
you.
Been working on it. And they said, what's the first thing we must do for this course? I said, make it playful. So they've good. Produced it with all kinds of munchkins wandering around on the page of your on the screen of your internet.
So people can go online. Well, they can go to your job site, which is
jobhuntersbible.com.
jobhuntersbible.com, and they can find out all about that.
Thanks,
and
Richard.
Got to go now,
yeah,
so.
We'll let you go so you can get working on those six other books you have in you.
Okay.
Thanks for joining us on Mountain Money.
Thank you, Larry.
Thanks,
Sam.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye.